snap. The kick is in the air, and the kick this time is no, sir, Ree. No, sir, Ree. Final score, Tennessee 20, Florida 17. Pandemonium reigns.
You're listening to the RTI Podcast, powered by WalkieTalkInsider.com.
RTI Podcast on this Tuesday afternoon. Happy to be joined by the voice of the Vols, Bob Kessling, today. Bob, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Trey. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. So we're getting here towards the end of the season. Hopefully Tennessee's got a month left before things are wrapped up. But how has it been for you and your production crew this year trying to put games together?
Well, it's obviously been the most unusual year, at times difficult and trying and just sometimes hard to do the games. But when you think back on it, the alternative is you can't do games, and we'd much rather be doing the games than not doing them. So, wearing a mask while you're calling the games at Thompson Bowling Arena certainly is different. Having to be COVID tested a couple of times a week has been, trying a little bit. Just, you got to do it, but it's still, you're thinking, are we ever going to get back to being normal? And then the SEC handed down the ruling that you couldn't travel to do road games. So we did it all from our studio here downstairs. And Trey, we're blessed here because the Ray and Lucy Hand studio is just phenomenal. And it's probably the best production studio of any school in the SEC. So we have these big video boards that we can sit in front of. So it's not like you're calling the game off a TV monitor. It's a big, it's like sitting up in the sixth row of the arena. So it's really been, that aspect of it has been good. But still, you'd rather be at the game. Because you don't feed off the crowd, you don't sense the atmosphere. It's one of my favorite times before a basketball game is we do Coach Barnes's interview about 90 minutes before the game, pretty much when he gets to the arena, and I go back in his little lounge area there off his dressing room, and we sit there and talk and go over stuff, and then we do the interview, and then I walk out, and you kind of come through the tunnel where the players run out, and when you turn that corner and you walk out there, and suddenly wham, you're hit with 20,000 fans and the pep band's playing, and you just get that adrenaline rush, and that adrenaline rush just hadn't been there because there are no fans and there's no pep band, there's no cheerleaders, there's no nothing. So it's been different, and it's been hard at times, but still, again, getting to do the games has been the joy of it, and getting to watch the players be able to play the games. And the fact we're at the NCAA tournament right now, they've made it this far, I think is rather remarkable and quite a tribute to the medical staffs at all these schools.
And that's something I want to get back to the broadcasting in a minute, but just getting the season started, there was just so much talk in the month leading up to the regular season. Then, you have to cut out some non-conference games. And you've been behind the scenes, how difficult was it just to get things off the ground? Because we didn't know what it would look like in the wintertime when it comes to basketball.
Well, you got up every morning and you kind of dreaded picking up your phone or looking at the TV because you didn't know if games are going to be canceled, if the season was going to be canceled, if how many people were infected, all those type things. Then when games started being canceled and then suddenly all this contact tracing, which I'm still not sure people really understand exactly what that's all about and why you have to do it and all those type things. But I think there were a lot of people that were calling for the season to be canceled. Why should we be doing this? Why should we be putting players in jeopardy? Why should we be putting fans in jeopardy? What are we doing? And we don't know anything about this virus. We don't know where it's going. So why are we playing basketball? But thankfully, some clearer heads decided, eventually we got to get back to normal. So let's try and play if we can. And again, I think Greg Sankey did a tremendous job of being able to kind of stay sensible about all of this and try and let the medical people provide him with information. And he kind of said from the start of football season, we're going to play. We're going to figure it out and we're going to play. So I think Commissioner Sankey did a tremendous job of keeping everybody on course. And again, I'm just glad that that there haven't been any severe outbreaks here at Tennessee, especially, and some of the other SEC schools. There have been setbacks, but there's never been a thought that you weren't going to be able to play basketball games. You knew it was going to be a challenge to get all 25 in, but you were pretty sure you were going to play a lot of games.
Bob, so walk me through it when you and Bert are getting together to call an away game. And I've seen this from many different areas, like the University of Alabama, Chris Stewart and them, they would call games from a restaurant. Like it was weird at times. But with you guys being in the Ray and Lucy Hand studio, what is the preparation like that? I know people have asked me, are the guys on the road calling the games? And it's like, no. And they all wonder how it gets done. Can you kind of walk through that preparation and having to be, it's different for you because you get to see it live and not 5-10 second delay like you would see on TV. What's that been like?
Yeah. Again, ESPN has been very cooperative through the SEC network. And we probably couldn't have pulled this off without the SEC network and our studio here because, we have hookups to Bristol and we have hookups to Charlotte, where the SEC network is located, and then of course where ESPN is. And so we have, and I don't know all the technical terms, but we have switchers and we can get direct feeds from those two areas. So whatever game that Tennessee's playing in, and especially in conference play, we were able to get a feed for those games. And so they flip a switch and suddenly the game's up on the big board and you call it there. And you're right. Some of the other schools have done things differently. I know Auburn does their basketball games from the football stadium, and because they have all their equipment for it's all wired for football, and so they go outside their booth and there's just a TV monitor hanging up on the wall, and that's where Andy and his crew do their games. And every place is different, and everybody does the best. I think Mississippi State, I think Neil Price told me they're doing their games from the football stadium as well, just calling it off a TV monitor. So we're blessed that, again, we have all these facilities here at Tennessee, and we have these huge video boards. And, again, it's just like being in the arena. And so that makes it a lot easier. So, well, and the other thing you got to do, you got to get a hookup for crowd noise.
Right.
And so our engineer has to be able to get the radio engineer of the home team is kind of responsible for sending the audio feed, you know, with the baskets being mic'd and all those type of things. They've got to get the audio feed from whatever arena we're at. And that has to be in real time. So again, there's, you've got to jump through some hoops to get that feed, because if there's no crowd noise, it's just like you're sitting in a dead studio and with no crowd noise and no atmosphere at all. So it really is helpful to have the crowd feed in your headset.
Bob, let's talk about the basketball team going into the season. There were a lot of expectations, but I kind of always looked at it, Bob, as like, it felt like this was going to be like a Kentucky team or a Duke team, in a sense of it's going to take 10 to 12 games for them to really start kind of figuring it out and playing together and kind of trusting each other, because it was such a crazy off season. What were your expectations heading into this season, especially with the, with Jaden and Keon and them trying to figure out their roles along with the returning starters like Fulkerson, Santiago and whatnot?
I didn't get to watch him much in preseason because the place was locked down. Basically they didn't want visitors over there, and that, you know, I always in preseason always like to go over and watch practice and get a feel for what the team looks like. But the few times I got to see him, Springer and Johnson kind of jumped off the page. And, you know, it's interesting when you go to practice, even in football, guys like Eric Berry, and they jump off the page at you, Dale Carter, you know, those guys are going to be special. And you could see that in Springer and Johnson. They just look different. They had a different feel for the game. And when they would run up down the floor and the decisions they would make and the passes they would make, you knew they were going to be special. But then it comes, how are they going to blend in? Well, they start the season, and as you know, Tennessee came racing out of the blocks, and they're playing those guards out there all handling the ball and running them down the floor in transition. And there was really exciting basketball. And then suddenly Alabama comes to town and kind of exposes Tennessee a little bit, spreading them out and breaking down the defense and pressuring the point guards and those type things. And so Tennessee has had to make some adjustments since then, which is good. Because you've got to make those adjustments when you get to the tournament. You've got to be able to know not only what your strengths are, but I think at NCAA tournament time, you need to know your weaknesses so you can make adjustments, because you know these teams are going to attack your weakness. So what's the Tennessee weakness right now? Point guard, obviously, turning the ball over, and the lack of rebounding. And those are things that Tennessee's going to have to address in the NCAA tournament if they want to stay around for a while. And so when Tennessee has taken care of the ball and they've rebounded, then they've won. But go back and look at the games they've lost. You know, Alabama, they turned the ball over 19 times. Missouri, I think they turned it over 18 times. So Ole Miss, they turned it over 18 times. So the games they lose, they turn the ball over. So you've got to correct that. Can't turn it over in the NCAA tournament. Guard play is so important in the NCAA tournament. And Tennessee's got capable guards. And when they play that four-guard offense and they get out in transition, then they're really good. But they've got to rebound. They can't Tennessee has not been a good half-court team all year. When teams force them to play, run set plays in their offense, not out of timeouts, but just come down and try and run a play, they've struggled with that at times. But when they're out in transition and they're running the floor, they're awfully hard to stop. And that's how Tennessee wants to play. They want to play fast. They want to get them down the floor, and they want to beat you down the floor and score before you get your defense set. So that'll be a key in this tournament. Can they do that? Can they get stops? Can they rebound? And can they run their transition offense and stay out of a half-court game?
When you look at the season, there were times where it just felt inconsistent. One game they play one way, the next game they come out and they score 51 points and they get beat up in the paint. Why do you think there has been inconsistencies from game to game with this Tennessee basketball team this year?
Well, I think if you look at the games they have won, and they shot a good percentage, they took care of the ball, they got points in the paint. The games they lost, they turn the ball over a lot, take too many threes, and they don't get many points in transition. So I think it's all about Tennessee's transition game. And again, the transition game takes you back to getting stops and rebounding. And this is not a good half-court offensive team, at least they haven't been consistently. They've got to get out. You know, the first 25 minutes of the Alabama game, they were flying up and down the floor. Yep. And they were beating Alabama back, and they were getting shots off before Bama's defense got set. Well, in the second half, Alabama, after the first 5 minutes, started making shots, and then suddenly Alabama was able to set its defense, and Tennessee struggled. So it's about getting stops and getting that transition game going. They've got to be able to run the ball and let Springer and Keon Johnson create shots and get to the basket.
When we talk about John Fulkerson, we'll get to Epons here in a minute. John Fulkerson, he comes in, and there are expectations this year, but you kind of expect teams to kind of figure that out sometime during the season and make Tennessee play a different way. Were you surprised it kind of happened with Fulkerson earlier in the season where, it felt like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders, and it just got to a point where other guys have had to step up in that situation? What has been your thoughts? You've watched him every single game this year. What's your thoughts on John Fulkerson and his play?
I never thought he was healthy. I just didn't think physically he was 100% all year. I know he had COVID. He's talked about COVID and how it set him back. He just looked like he couldn't catch his breath and couldn't play hard for extended minutes. Then he hurt his back. I think that was a problem. Then he hurt his hand. And you could tell there was a stretch of games where every time he caught the ball, he kind of winced a little bit. And you could tell that his back was bothering him. So, and John's not going to make excuses, and he's not going to talk about it, but I just didn't think he was healthy. And the other thing, when you enter the season as a first team all SEC selection and a potential player of the year in the conference, other teams are going to game plan against you. And I think teams really concentrated on stopping John Fulkerson. I think they were rushing double teams at him. I think the big guys that were defending him one-on-one learned not to take his head fakes. I think they studied Fulkerson and got a game plan against him. I mean, last year, you know, John would get down low, he'd throw that head fake and then spin around you and get a layup. Well, it seems like this year the big guys aren't taking those head fakes, and because they've watched tape and they've learned that what he does. And then when they do that, then you've got, as a player, then you got to make adjustments. And I think John has been a little bit slow, and because he hasn't been totally healthy, and making some of those adjustments. And I do think, Trey, you're right. I think he was pressing a little bit. I mean, I think that John was expecting, you know, that he needed to score 15 points a game to help his team. And some nights that just wasn't happening. And so he would press a little bit, but I think at toward the end of the season, I think he kind of settled in that, you know, whatever I got to do, if I only score 4 points, and he had a whole bunch of games where I only scored 4 points and we still win, that's okay. And I think he's kind of settled on that. He said there's, you know, that there are other people on this team that can help Tennessee win. So, but I think it's been a trying year. And I think that John got frustrated at times. I think he got discouraged, but I think when it's all said and done, John is all about the team and how the team's going to perform. And you saw it on senior day. I don't know if I've ever seen a guy on senior day more emotional about playing his final game potentially at Thompson Bowling Arena than John Fulkerson, because it means so much to him. Wearing the orange shirt means something to him. And that was a special day. So, you know, this is all very important to John. Right now, just hope he can play. Rick Barnes told us on Vol calls Monday night that this is literally day to day, and they're just waiting for the doctors to see if he can play. I'm sure he'll probably have to wear some kind of mask if he can play, but you know, the concussion protocol he's got to be in, and just the eye situation. We'll just see how that plays out. We might not know till Friday morning.
And it could be something where Tennessee needs to win a game on Friday to get him back for Sunday. I mean,
maybe. You don't know. You don't know what the extent of the concussion is. Nobody's come out and said he's got a concussion, but you got to believe he does. I mean, looked like he was knocked out when he caught that second elbow. You just hope he's healthy. I mean, and if he does have a concussion, which I'm not saying he does, I don't know, but those things are tricky and those things are dangerous, and you better make sure that he's 100%, and they will. They won't let him play unless he's 100%.
Hey, what have you thought of Epons this year? It feels kind of different than last year, but also he still has that presence in the paint. You know, we saw that in the SEC tournament. We had 9 blocks, and
yeah,
he's breaking a record. What has been your thought on Epons? Because he came back this year, and, you know, he hasn't turned into a 10-point, you know, 8-rebound kind of guy every night, but he still has that just presence in the paint. Your thoughts on Pons?
Well, you can tell he's a very gifted athletic basketball player that has unbelievable timing. And I'm just amazed at his leaping ability, being able to straight up and block shots without fouling guys and swatting down on the ball. He just goes up and kind of hangs in the air and, you know, says, okay, go ahead and make your move, and then I'll, you know, block your shot, and which he kind of does. He's another guy that I think was really slowed with an ankle and a knee injury. And you could just tell his lateral movement, side to side stuff, wasn't where it's been in the past. And it looks like the last couple of games, he's the old Epons. He's healthy. He's got that spring in his step. He's been able to jump up and down and make plays and guard the basket, and has been a dominant defensive force. It has been a little disappointing that his offensive game hasn't been more consistent. and that he hasn't gotten to the free throw line as much as you think he would, because he relies on that little turnaround 10-foot jump shot. And then he's a reluctant three-point shooter, but he will take three-point shots at the end of shot clocks. But his, you know, that's one of the reasons he came back, was to work on that mid-range game, because he's going to need that if he wants to try and play in the NBA or pro basketball over in Europe. So his jump shot, it seems like he falls away on every shot instead of going into the shot. And that's something he's going to have to work on. But he's still a force, and Tennessee really needs him. And he just needs to – well, let me look here real quick. Pons, so far this year, has only shot 34 free throws.
Wow.
So you would think a guy that, you know, is that physical around the basket would take it to the hoop more and try and draw fouls and get to the line. He shoots a decent percentage when he gets – I mean, he's 76% free throw shooter when he gets there, but he's only been there 34 times. So you average that out, what Tennessee's played 26 games, you know, that's barely, you know, what, 1.2 a game or something like that. You would think he'd get there more. So we'll just he can't rely on that jump shot all the time. He just needs to put his head down. But
saw that a couple of times too. Like, you know, it was interesting when they played Vanderbilt. I remember it vividly because he was right outside the perimeter on that right wing. And he just drove to the basket, and he got through three defenders, and he slams it home. It seems like a little bit times this year, it may be hesitant to go straight to the basket and more so trying to hit that 5 to 10 foot shot.
Yeah. And it's a fadeaway shot. It's not a shot where he's kind of going into the defender to try and draw a foul. Maybe it's because he's not that confident in his handle, that he's afraid he might turn it over when he dribbles. I'm not sure, but there's nobody that wants to get in front of him if he puts his head down and goes to the basket, and he will draw fouls, but that's not his game right now. That's not what he's doing. So, but he's going to have to rebound. And you know, when Josiah James is your leading rebounder and Eve is averaging 5 rebounds a game, I mean, you would think Eve would be a double double guy with his athletic.
Right.
So in this NCAA tournament, they're going to need E. Pons to play really well. And if he plays well, plays defensively, rebounds, and scores 10 to 15 a game, Tennessee's got a great chance of winning a lot of games in this tournament. But Pons has to play well.
When you look at the season, and Tennessee kind of made an adjustment where they went to their freshman and – it feels like the movies where a coach says, all right, go in. You know what I mean? Kind of just let's change it up. Let's do something. When do you think that moment was this year where Rick Barnes and the staff finally realized, okay, maybe we're not getting as much out of Fulkerson and others that we need to. Now we just have to put it on these guys and just let them go.
I think after the Alabama game, I just think that they looked at, you know, how Alabama was defending Tennessee and how Tennessee really struggled offensively to score against that really good Alabama defense in that first game. And they kind of changed things. And, you know, remember that, you know, Springer got the ankle injury, missed a couple of games, and Johnson got banged up a little bit there for a while. And so when they got back healthy and he put them in the starting lineup and those guys, I mean, they're so talented. I mean, it's obvious that they're the top two scorers on the team right now. So it's obvious that they're very talented players, and you've got to go to them, and they've started doing that. So Coach Barnes, you know, had said that if there weren't for some of those guys being banged up and some injuries, he probably would have put them in the starting lineup earlier. But right now they are your two biggest offensive threats consistently, and you've got to go through those guys, and they're hard to stop. You know, Alabama, Keon, what scored 16 in the first half against Alabama, and then Bama changed their entire defensive philosophy in the second half. They put Herb Jones on Keon, and that really kind of slowed Tennessee down a little bit. So that tells you that Keon is a key force in this game. Victor Bailey's a wild card as well. You know, look back at the games that Tennessee has won, and Victor Bailey has shot the ball well. He has been one of the most inconsistent shooters that Tennessee's had in a while. He's got a great stroke, and he's a good shooter, but he's just been a little bit inconsistent, the ups and downs. You know, you get 29 one night, and then he gets 4 the next night. And that's, as a coach, sometimes that's hard to live with. But Victor has to step up. And the, one of the reasons that Tennessee has been inconsistent inside is there's not that constant threat outside to hit three-point shots. Now, Tennessee will knock down a few, but they, you know, last year, whether Jordan Bowden was hitting them or not, you still had to go guard him. And that opened things up for Fulkerson a lot. And then if John would get double teamed, he'd have an outlet to Bowden. And that was a pretty good formula for Tennessee to win some games. But I'm not sure right now that the opposing teams really fear Tennessee's three-point shooting. And so they're able to pack things in like Kentucky did against Tennessee here.
Right.
You know, just Kentucky, heck, they had all 5 guys inside the lane and basically said, we're going to switch everything. Or if you want to shoot three-pointers, go ahead, but you're not going to beat us in the lane. So, and I think a lot of teams have made that adjustment against Tennessee.
Is that what Santiago Vescovi can be? Or is that asking too much? Because we've seen so many great three-point shooters come through over the last, I don't know, 20 years, 30 years. Everybody remembers Lamonte, you know, where he can get outside and hit a shot, or Bowden can hit a shot. Was that what Tennessee coaches were relying on Santiago to do? Because we've seen this year, Bob, where he's not getting to the rim as much and dishing it off. It's more so outside the perimeter.
Well, that's his game. I mean, you know, he's taken 134 three-point shots this year, which is the most on the team. So it's not like he's not taking shots.
Right.
And he's shooting a decent percentage. He's shooting 37% from three-point range. But he's a spot-up, standstill shooter. And he's not a guy that creates his own shot very much. He's not a guy that can shoot off the dribble that well, although he's done it more this year than he has in the past. But, you know, he's deadly when he gets his feet set. And, you know, Santiago is – I enjoy going to the games early and setting up and then watching Santiago. He's out there 2 hours before the game, and he'll probably shoot 150 three-pointers before the game and probably make 75% of them. So, I mean, he really works on that shot. He knows that that's what he contributes to this team, and he works on it. He's a deadly outside shooter, but, you know, he is more of a two-guard than he is a point guard. So when you put him at point, you also take away a little bit from his offense, because he's so concerned about getting them in an offense and getting the play started that he's not able to just go out there and spot up and get ready to launch those three-point shots. But Santiago's a weapon. And again, when he's hitting 3 or 4 three-pointers a game, that really makes Tennessee tougher to beat.
Before I get to my last question on the NCAA tournament, your perception so far of new athletic director Danny White? He's been on the job for a little bit now, a month and a half, something like that. But your perception so far?
I think he brings a lot of energy to the position. I think he is trying to mold the athletic department and his image right now, and trying to get it to the point where this is how I think this thing needs to run. I think he's very aware of social media. I think he's very aware of being trendy. I think he's aware of kind of getting the hot spots and kind of getting the fan base ignited. I think he understands this is a tough job, and until football gets fixed, it's going to be a tough job. And when football gets fixed, it'll be easier, but it's still in a position where Tennessee is in the middle of the pack of the SEC, and that's not where anybody wants or thinks Tennessee should be. And so his job is to get Tennessee to move up a couple of notches, and he wants to do as quickly as he can. I don't think he lets the grass grow under his feet very much. And I think he understands. I mean, he's a veteran athletic director, and he's got a great resource in his dad. If something goes wrong here, he has a guy that he can bounce ideas off. And I think he has a definite plan on what he wants to do. And I think that's why he got the job, because he impressed the Tennessee administration that he has a plan to get this thing fixed and get it back up and running. So I haven't spent a lot of time with him yet. On the totem pole, I'm probably, if there are 10 notches on the totem pole, I'm about 9.5. So he hasn't asked for my opinion on much of anything, nor should he. But I've just been kind of impressed about, seems to be a little more energy around the building. You can kind of feel it a little more. And that I think Danny expects, he's going to set the bar pretty high here, and he's going to expect people to get to that bar.
All right, Bob, you're going to be heading up to Indy. I didn't know this till yesterday. I thought you might be calling it from home, which I think it's even better that you and Bert are heading up to Indianapolis. And your expectations for Tennessee in this tournament, I watched two of Oregon State's, their last game, watched their semifinal and the final in the Pac-12. It seems like they kind of rely on the guard a little bit. They don't do much in the paint, kind of off and on. It kind of reminded me of Florida, to be honest with you, Bob, where Trey Mann goes for 30, and then, you know, they try to figure out what they're going to do inside the paint, especially against Fulkerson. What are your expectations for Tennessee in this tournament? And if they want to advance into the second weekend, what do they got to do in the first weekend?
Well, it's about how you're playing. It's not about what your record is. It's about how you're playing. And I'm not sure there's a hotter team in the country right now than Oregon State. I mean, what they did in the Pac-12 championship tournament was pretty remarkable. And, you know, they were picked to finish 12th in the Pac-12, and then they were seeded 12th in this NCAA tournament. So apparently they're having T-shirts made up with number 12 on them. That's going to be their rallying point to try and get them going for the tournament. But it's a hot team, and they've played with a lot of confidence. They got two really good guards, and Thompson and Lucas, and those guys can fill it up. They've been kind of streaky during the season, but here in the postseason they've been hitting their shots. They've got some size inside. They got a couple of big guys that don't score a lot, but they rebound. And so I think it's what we came back to. If Tennessee rebounds, gets some stops, and gets out in transition, I think they can hang with anybody in this tournament. So to me, though, that's the key, rebounding and transition basketball, because if Tennessee settles into a half-court game, they're going to struggle.
That's fantastic. Hey, real quick, I forgot to ask, is it going to be weird going to – you've been in a bubble for pretty much for the last 9 months. Is it going to be any different in Indianapolis? Like, even for the players, like, I know they had the 24-hour quarantine right when they got there. I don't know if you guys will have to do that or not, but is it going to be any kind of difference this year besides it being in one city or one outlying area?
Well, we are not in the bubble. The only people that are in the bubble are the 34 people that are on the trip. And so that's the staff and, you know, the trainers and managers and all of those people that travel with the team. We're not included in that. We had Rick Barnes on Vol Calls last night. He said that as soon as he got off the bus, they had medical people there to escort him into the hotel. I mean, so they went into the bubble as soon as they got off the bus. And the first thing they did was they went and got COVID tested as soon as they got to the hotel. And then they took him to the ballroom and I guess explained some things. So they go from the ballroom where they eat their meals to their hotel floor. And each team has a floor in the hotel, and they're not allowed to leave that unless they're going to practice. So they can't hang out with their family. They can't walk around just to get some fresh air. They practice at the convention center, which there are walkways from the hotel to the convention center. So they can't even go outside to walk on the street to go to the convention center. They've got to go through this, the walkway across the street to go to the convention center to go practice. So they've got this thing pretty much locked down. And the last thing the NCAA wants to do is have two or three teams get an outbreak. And then suddenly, you know, teams are dropping like flies out of this tournament. So that's the last thing they want. I'm sure the NCAA is going to be thrilled when they get these games started on Friday and get the first batch out of the way.
Or you could be not the referees to go out to dinner before they get tested and then they get sent home.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? I saw a deal with Ted Valentine today and he said, we didn't think anything about it. We couldn't check in our hotel room. So we just went out to dinner and come back, we get tested and we get popped. So it's crazy, but we will not be in the bubble. So we will stay at a separate hotel. And we will be just like a normal fan that is going into the game. I don't know where the broadcast positions will be. I know we're at the Pacers Arena downtown. To be honest with you, I was kind of hoping we'd be at Hinkle Fieldhouse.
Right? I know.
We did a Butler game a couple of years ago, and that was tremendous doing a game in Hinkle Fieldhouse. It's just so cool. Or I've never done a game at Indiana, so I was thinking maybe.
Oh wow!
Play it at I don't know what the name of the arena.
Assembly Hall. Yeah,
it's not Assembly Hall anymore. They named it after a big donor.
Mark Cuban now.
No, it's not Cuban, but I can't pronounce his name. It's you know, one of those SVJOK deals. I can't pronounce that. I'm not sure how they pronounce the name, but. So anyway, I was hoping to be there, but I'm fine. Our hotel is right next to the Pacers Arena. And, so we'll walk across the street and do the games and hope we get a long stay in Indy this weekend.
Well, I hope you guys, have a great time. Hope you guys have a great call and I hope you're there for a while. Cause I don't feel like Tennessee's basketball season being over yet. I'd like for it to go on for a little bit longer. So
yeah, this has been a special team. It's been a lot of fun to watch this team grow and the way they played back in December, you knew this team had a lot of potential if they could keep building. They've had bumps along the way. They've had those ups and downs, as we all know, but when they play together, they're as about as much fun and exciting as a team we've had around here in a long, long time. So the one thing that gives you hope is that, as I mentioned before, guard play in March is so important. And Tennessee has really good guard play. Don't have a great point guard, natural point guard on the team, but they've got four guards that can all handle the ball and make plays. And that's a lot more than most teams in this tournament. So that's a big advantage for Tennessee, is the fact they do have guards that can handle the ball, move it up and down the floor. They can beat you in transition. And if they get that transition game going, Tennessee's going to be hard out.
That's awesome. Bob, I wish you guys safe travel. Have a great call on Friday. We'll be listening. And thank you for joining today.
Trey, anytime. Always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.